Elise Wagner, who currently has a show at Butters Gallery. Stay tuned for Stage and Studio with host Demay Roberts. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market, From Our Hands to Yours, celebrating 41 years of American arts and crafts, freshly prepared foods with an international flavor, and local music every Saturday and Sunday from March 1st through Christmas Eve in Waterfront Park. Local artisans, international food, live music, PortlandSaturdayMarket.com.
I'm Demay Roberts, Stage and Studio. You're listening to a soundscape by Sharath Patel, the sound designer from Portland Shakespeare Project's The Tempest. Today, we're featuring another round of Shakespeare plays about to open in Portland. We have a plethora of Shakespeare in Portland. First, we talk with founding artistic director Michael Mendelson of Portland Shakespeare Project. They're about to open The Tempest, and it's starring veteran actress Linda Alper as Prospera, a magical role usually performed by a male actor. And we'll also hear about Love's Labor's Lost at Post 5 Theater. We'll talk with director Avital Shira. Stay tuned. This is Stage and Studio. I'm Demay Roberts, Stage and Studio. Portland Shakespeare Project is about to open Shakespeare's The Tempest on July 9th, and it runs through August 3rd at Artist Repertory Theater's Alder Stage. The Tempest is a tale of magic, revenge, and love. It starts off with a storm that shipwrecks a group of noblemen. The storm, or the tempest, was created by a wizard who had been stranded there years before with a daughter. That wizard was originally played by a man. This time, veteran actress Linda Alper is performing the role as Prospera. The Tempest is also set in a more contemporary time period. Founding artistic director Michael Mendelson of the Portland Shakespeare Project came by my office studio so we could talk about The Tempest. I'm Demay Roberts, here with Michael Mendelson, artistic director of Portland Shakespeare Project, which is in its fourth year. God, the time goes by fast, doesn't it?
It is. It's very exciting, too, but I'm actually the founding artistic director now, and Grant Turner has been joined our group to be the co-artistic director.
That's a new thing. Yeah, that's a very completely. New thing, and you are building the structure so it's even bigger.
Correct. Yes, we'll be expanding our season starting next year.
What does that mean, expanding the season?
Our long-term goals is to offer more than two productions during the summer.
Oh, so
I'm being very secretive.
You're being very secretive because what I see is a twinkle in your eye. So we're starting off in a sort of mysterious fashion here, but you do have two new shows coming up. The main show being The Tempest, which is starring the wonderful Linda Alper as Prospera, and she's going to be the wizard of the island. I mean, this is just fantastic that
the mistress, the master of the island.
Mistress of the island. That was something that I think that people maybe a few years back were hesitant to do, is to cast a woman in a man's role, especially a leading male-like
role. Well, I think there are structural things that in the day that Shakespeare provided for females. Those roles were written for men to carry this huge expositional language. And the female roles were in the more delicate scenes, the love scenes, the lightly comic scenes. On occasion, there would be those wonderful pants roles, the Rosalinds, the Violas, to handle a lot of that weighty language. But I think in these huge, kind of mammoth parts, they needed a mature male actor to support this language. And it has been done before. Ashlyn did a production with Demetra Pittman as a Prospera. And in that production, Linda Alper played Antonia. I never saw that production. I've seen pictures of it. And Linda has that to draw from. And then we have the wonderful Julie Taymor movie, which, you know, I think is really, people are really on the fence about it. Did it work? Did it not work? Is the structure intact? I think a lot of it worked and a lot of it didn't work for me.
Well, that was starring Helen Mirren.
Correct.
And I think what worked for me was that it was Helen Mirren. That part worked for me.
I think you have to have, and I'll just put this in quotes, a star in that role. You need someone who has the chops that can support the language, use the text as it's written, support it, and find nuance in it and make it personal.
Whether it's male or female.
Correct.
Yeah. I mean, I think that role especially has some of the most beautiful speeches, and it is the last play that Shakespeare is credited for writing, I believe. Mm-hmm. It is his final curtain speech, if you will, towards the end there.
Sure. There's also this small thought, well, maybe it wasn't. But regardless of whether it was or not, I think the journey of revenge to reconciliation, the journey of sort of a utopian society. I've been doing a little reading in this wonderful book called The Will in the World, and they were talking about how there was so much persecution between, you know, the Protestant, the ruler would be Protestant, and all the Catholics were killed, and then the ruler would be Catholic, and they'd get rid of all the Protestants, and there was no regime, if you will, that embraced all languages or all religions. History would have rewritten itself had that happened. So there's that. There's all the different notions of love in the show, whether it's first love with Miranda and Ferdinand, whether it's a child and a parent love, whether it's servant love for the master, master's love of servant, friendship love, familial love. We explore it all in the show.
For me, The Tempest holds a special place because it is so well structured as a play. There isn't anything that isn't complex within that. Even the comedic scenes are so complex, and they're rife with these multiple layers of characters when you have Caliban interacting even with the comical characters of Trinculo and Stefano. There's so much metaphorically about his place in society and class and how people are mistreated versus, you know, royalty versus people who are indigenous to a particular island. I mean, mm-hmm. There's so many different layers that you have within The Tempest.
It is a bear of a play to work on. Yeah, and, you know, I think a director always anticipates it's never going to be quite as easy as you think it is. Well, I never thought The Tempest would be easy, but it's something, and I never thought that I would necessarily be directing it in my fourth season. I thought it would have come much later down the line. But I think that there's a lot of issues and topics in the show that I was ready to start looking at, especially in my own life. The biggest one being what happens to someone who holds on to revenge or the notion of revenge for 12 years? And then what kind of hollow victory is that when all of a sudden you get what you want? And how much time has wasted? Because life could have been so different, regardless of whether you were the punisher or the punished. So that's a kind of a fascinating thread too. And I think writing something like this in the latter part of your career, one can't help but have to invest in all of those different layers and journeys.
He was putting so much of his, I don't want to say end of career,
his experience
into it, his life experience, and about how, you know, sort of reaching the winter of his life, you know, and there's so much of that. But I also compare it to, in some ways, King Lear, because that is always lauded, and which you've done before, mm-hmm. you know, as one of his more complex work. But I also think Tempest is just as complex as Lear.
I think Tempest is just as complex as Lear, if not more so. If you really want to make Ariel and Caliban not real people, but have a real quote unquote human journey so we can understand them, so they live in the world of this play, I think is really tricky. And then to craft the clowns so they live in the world of the play and they're not doing they're not in another play of themselves, and to allow Antonia and Gonzalo and Alonso and Sebastian a real journey in the play and allow them to be memorable characters as well. Plus, what do you do with the spirits and the goddesses? There's a lot going on in this play.
I'm glad to hear you have the goddesses, because my very first play in college, and also just first Shakespeare play, was as the goddess Ceres.
Oh, yeah, in The Tempest.
And the director actually kept, you know, the monologues in.
Sure.
And often that's cut. So are you're keeping the goddesses?
Yes, we've kept the goddesses.
That is such good news, because often that is just cut, or, you know, perhaps it's sung, and that's beautiful too. But the language of the goddesses is quite, it's funny, but it's also can be quite beautiful.
I think the goddesses serve in our production a really poignant moment of, there's this whole thing about everyone getting married now, and there's this whole, you know, we can't deny it that, you know, the LGBT population is now really experiencing that whole world. But I think oftentimes people fly into marriage and don't really consider the weight of what they're doing. And that's what I think is so beautiful about this scene, is that it reminds us about how important it is, how weighty that commitment is. And it's not something to be taken lightly. And it's a beautiful scene. It's just a beautiful, and it's a magical scene, and it's part of the magic of the island.
And let's not forget, it is a magical play. It is about, it is supernatural. It's fantastic. I mean, we are talking about real life people stranded on the island, but we're also talking about spirits.
So yes, that's all true. But even the bigger conversation is, what does magic mean to us in this play? What's really interesting is my influences. I am a TV generation guy.
Oh, me too.
Right, yes.
That's what we grew up on.
Exactly, and I still watch an extraordinary amount of TV. So my
Game of Thrones.
Do you know that's one I haven't gotten into yet?
Okay.
I've been a little busy.
I was going to say magic. I thought you might be bringing that.
My influences for this have been very strongly the Cornus Quartet, which is a musical group, but also Lost. And
that was set on an island.
Exactly. American Horror Story Coven. Those were two of the big things as I was looking at, well, how do we define magic in this world? I don't think magic is something that, you know, there's like a bring.
I think it's about also being able to overcome your limits, you know, in some way.
And I think it's
and
a
your
mental.
Weaknesses too.
Yeah. And I think it is also a mental and psychological intention that creates things to happen in the world. And she has, Prospera has honed that kind of skill.
So with The Tempest, you're also producing a stage reading that John Kretzu is directing.
Correct.
Called The Admirable Crichton, and it's running July 9th through August 3rd, but it's not a play that you would associate with J.M. Barrie, because, you know, you associate
Peter Pan. Yeah.
But this one is unusual because it's also set on an island.
It is. When I read it, I was just kind of thrilled with it, and it seemed like a perfect fit for us. It's as if the crew from Downton Abbey took a boating holiday and crashed on a deserted island. And what's extraordinary for me, and it's a story completely about class structure, which is not unlike what happens in The Tempest. This boat crashes and everyone's equal all of a sudden. And their money and their power and their position does not support them where they are. What's beautiful about, and is a theme in The Tempest, what's beautiful about this is that once on the island, people's true natures start coming out, and you see servants stepping up and leading, and you see aristocracy either working for the first time in their life and loving it, or completely letting go of any of that power and just becoming this creature that lives on the island. And that happens for two acts. It develops itself over acts two and three, and then in act four, they get rescued. And how much of these new beings that they've become actually hold and who reverts back to their old self and who cannot revert back to their old self and move forward in a very different way. It's a very surprising, funny, and poignant play. And it's thrilling because the majority of the Tempest cast will be in the Admirable Crichton as well.
It's interesting to have a companion play that isn't Shakespeare. And you did that last year with Taming of the Shrew and...
The Tamer Tamed.
The Tamer Tamed, thank you. And I think that it's interesting to have that as a compliment. Now, J.M. Barrie, of course, wasn't a contemporary of Shakespeare, but the themes seem to align with The Tempest. I liked your comparison of the Downton Abbey crew. You know, it would be kind of cool to see the lords and the servants end up being on an island together. And who would really survive? I think it would be the servants.
You know? Well, they're the ones that do the work. And it's really interesting. But you're also surprised by many of the aristocracy, what they decide to do and how they decide to be. And you see people through a different lens. It's very Chekhovian in a way, too, that they throw all these people together in an unfamiliar setting or a setting that's not in the city. And all of a sudden, their true natures start coming out.
It's like a Chekhov play in some respects as far as the journey.
Definitely, definitely.
So here you are. You're starting to open your fourth season. And you are starting to build up the company as well as becoming one of the resident artists of as Portland Shakespeare Project of Artist Repertory
one
Theater.
My titles, and I'm really grateful for them, are the Artistic Associate at Artist Rep, and I'm a resident artist there as well. And we are a resident company, Portland Shakespeare Project, in the Artist Rep building and in the family of companies that are there.
I mean, that is a big decision to do that. I think it's an interesting model that other companies might be able to use in the future.
Gosh, I hope so. I think that the energy that is happening in the Artist Repertory Theater building is extraordinary. Playboy, the Western World sold out. Buried Child for Profiles sold out. Our ticket sales are doing wonderfully for our fourth season with Portland Shakespeare Project. So there's just a lot of energy right there. There's also the Red Door Project. PATA has offices there. I think the Revels, Portland Revels, have offices there as well.
Well, but so that kind of energy is really interesting to watch and as it blooms and blossoms, because I think what's happening there, it's almost as if there's a multiple arts complex happening, a multi-arts complex happening there.
Definitely, definitely. And it's kind of thrilling to have that much energy in the building all the time. It really is a place to be. And we're thrilled to be producing there.
That was Michael Mendelson of Portland Shakespeare Project. The Tempest and the Admirable Crichton runs July 9th through August 3rd at Artist Repertory Theater's Alder Stage. That's located at 1515 Southwest Morrison Street in Portland. For more info, visit portlandshakes.org, or you can go to stageandstudio.org. You can also call the Artist Rep box office at 503-241-1278. That's 241-1278. Up next, we hear about Love's Labor's Lost, a Shakespeare comedy that features five women and five men who want to fall in love. The show is at Post 5 Theater, and director Avital Shira dropped by my office studio to tell us more.
There's quite a romp going on. There's a lot of longing between these lovers and actually a lot of pent-up sexual energy, because nobody really gets to touch in the play, much less, you know, have a conversation with each other. It's about the beginning moments of falling in love and that first moment of attraction and where that goes and where that can take you. And one of the things that I love most about this play is how authentic to life it is, in that we don't know how these four couples end up. There is no resolution in this play. As Barone says, it's too long for a play. And that action suspends past the end of the 2 hours traffic of our stage. And as someone who spends her whole life telling stories that usually start with something like Once Upon a Time and end with And They All Lived Happily Ever After, or devastation, you know, whatever it is, to have a story that mimics life in the way that it suspends, and we don't know the end of these people's stories, is really a special project to work on.
It's a lot of fun to be had, though, as they sort of play these dating games with each other.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, so we have Russian gymnasts and ladies in Breakfast at Tiffany's bed masks, all masquerading for each other. The boys try to pull the wool over the girls' eyes, and then the girls stick it to them. They're smarter than the boys. And we have pillow fights and all sorts of, it's a romp for the 2 hours until the very final moments when they have the opportunity to finally connect with one another and life interferes.
So how would you describe your concept of this play?
I mean, the question that I'm asking with this play, which is sort of how I approach concept, is what do you do when you don't know what to do next? You know, these boys at the beginning, this king has just become king. He's just lost his father, and he wants to be a good king. And so he takes a stab in the dark at what sort of action he should be taking at a time when he's still in mourning and doesn't know what to do. At the end of the play, we have these loving couples who would like to be coupled, and yet life interferes. And so what do they do when you don't know what's coming next? And I think in the uncertain times that we all have, especially for young people these days, I mean, I graduated in 2009. It was the worst year to graduate from college. And the economy was really a very uncertain landscape. And it continues to be, and it affects our relationships, and it affects the way that we see ourselves in the world. And so I think that's part of what draws me to this piece now.
You had a specific way of describing it that I've heard.
So I would describe the aesthetic that we're looking at as something like Gossip Girl meets Downton Abbey meets Portland. It's a very diverse world, even more so than most Shakespeare plays. And Shakespeare is inherently anachronistic in the way that it was originally designed. And I think it's very valuable to preserve that anachronism when we design plays today. So creating and capturing the expense of these upper class characters while and the wealth and the social pressures that come with it, while also creating characters like Costard, who was a love letter to the English people when he was originally conceived, and I hope is a love letter to Portland in the way that we have designed his book.
In looking at Love's Labour's Lost, you have also a character that, even though there's essentially 10 young people, there's also a character who's sort of trying to manage, all, especially the women, and that's Boyette, and I assume that's being played by Ithaca Tell?
Yes, so Ithaca Tell is playing Boyette, which is particularly interesting because she is not a man, and originally this role is conceived as a male's part. So Ithaca is ushering the men into into the kingdom, and they meet this barrier of a wall. And so it is part of Boyette's job to figure out how to circumvent that wall and how to bring all these couples together. And she's the matchmaker of the piece. But she also is able to dupe the men into thinking that she too is male in order to do so.
I think that's an interesting bit of casting myself. Now, when you talk about it being a romp, there's also just a major love story between the two major characters, which is Rosalind and Barone. And so they do end up falling in love, don't they?
Well, it's very interesting. 3 out of the 4 couples have met before the play begins, and that's part of this action being sort of in the middle rather than the beginning or the end of a story. So they've already shown interest in each other. The princess says, "God bless my ladies, are they all in love?" To her horror, it seems. And it's the journey of the play that while we see the princess and the king fall in love, all the rest of these couples are negotiating pre-existing relationships. Some people think that the sequel to Love's Labour's Lost, Love's Labour's Won, was another name for Much Ado About Nothing. And so we see the sort of beginnings of Benedick and Beatrice's bickering and loving relationship in the characters of Barone and Rosaline. I think there's a lot of love there, but they too do not end up together at the end of this play. And so that's something for, you know, our audience to figure out whether they think Barone comes at the end of the year, or they meet up 20 years later and they've changed their names, or what it is that that happens for each of these four couples.
It's interesting that you said that it was it's a sequel to, or that Much Ado About Nothing is a sequel to Love's Labor's Lost. Now, was that written right after Love's Labor's?
No, Much Ado About Nothing was written a little bit later. I mean, the dates are always a little bit fuzzy, but there is a listing of a play called Love's Labor's One in the register of plays that were performed at the Globe Theater, written by Shakespeare or attributed to Shakespeare, and we don't have that play. So some people think that it was Love's Labor's One. I take it with a grain of salt, but what I can say for sure is the sort of repartee and the listening required for it that happens between Benedick and Beatrice is something that you see in a delightful way between Barone and Rosaline throughout this piece.
In the end, then, what would you say is, I guess, is there a deeper meaning to this play for you?
This is one of my favorite Shakespeare plays, and it's one that I keep coming back to because this is a play that's near and dear to my heart. It's one that I've worked on previously and I hope to revisit many times throughout my career. Part of that is the suspension of this energy, this hope at the end of the play that, like we all hope, things will end well. And yet the lack of knowledge of that, the uncertainty, is what I think makes the playing worthwhile. And it's about the experience that even when you don't know how things are going to end up, the yearning for that, the reaching for that, is the experience that we have throughout our lives, our experience of delight and frustration and agony and the desire to die and the desire to fly into the air, all because of that which we care about most. And the loss that happens along the way and having to navigate that. And so the way that these young people have to negotiate that, I think, is incredibly astute, and it ages them very, very quickly. And that's something that I think we can relate to in all of our lives.
So there's a maturity that happens by the end of the play.
Absolutely. There's an awareness of the fact that time is not infinite that happens as part of the maturation process. They say at the beginning of the play, when spite of cormorant devouring time, the endeavor of this present breath shall bide the honor that shall bait his scythe's keen edge. So we're trying to defy death by studying all the time and making a reputation for yourself. And I think that's part of how we are as young people in the world. We want to put our mark on the world. And what we realize during the course of this play is what Shakespeare writes in his sonnets, which is the only way to truly live on is to live on through other people by creating new life. And that it's not actually by creating a stamp and a reputation and fame that we live on, but rather through our connections with other people and our ability to raise a new generation.
That was Avital Shira, director of Post Five Theater's Love's Labor's Lost by William Shakespeare. Performance dates are Thursday through Sunday, July 10th through August 3rd. All shows are at 7:30 p.m. and Sundays are Pay What You Can. All shows are located at Post Five Theater's La Crute Courtyard. That's located at 850 Northeast 81st Avenue, number 122 in Portland. Before we go today, a ticket giveaway to Portland Shakespeare Project's The Tempest. The show runs July 9th through August 3rd at Artist Repertory Theater's Alder Stage at 1515 Southwest Morrison. We'll take the first caller at 503-231-8032 to Portland Shakespeare Project's The Tempest. That's it for Stage and Studio. I'll have the show online later today at stageandstudio.org, as well as on the podcast on iTunes. Also, like us on facebook.com/stage_nstudio. You can also tweet me at @StageNStudio. Send me your events, your news, tweet me, or join the facebook.com/StageNStudio Facebook page. Till next time, I'm Dimae Roberts.
KABU wants you. Yes, you. Are you excited about the new possibilities for local independent media? Are you ready to help KABU reach out and grow stronger in the community? We're looking for candidates for KABU's board of directors, and we've extended our search through July 31st. So if you'd like to share your skills with the people who share your values, download a copy of our board candidate package at kboo.fm. Or you can pick up a copy at the station during business hours. We're located at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. Applications must be received by 5 p.m. July 31st, so don't delay. And we look forward to seeing more of you at KABU. Good morning. Thank you so much for listening to Art Focus. My name is Ava Lake, and I have with me today Elise Wagner. She's got more than one exhibition up, but the one that you can see here in Portland, Oregon is at Butters Gallery. I think that's just buttersgallery.com, yes?
Yes.
Yes. And your own website is your name?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Ava.
Yes. So, exhibition that's at Butters Gallery is called Uncharted Territories. We're going to get into that show, but I kind of want to like just mention everything that's going on with you right now. Aren't you also in a show in Lake Oswego?
I was, Lake Oswego Festival of the Arts. It was just a weekend show in late June.
Right. Well, what about Fire and Water? Is that the
That was
that,
it.
That's what we're talking about? Okay.
Yeah, and Jeff Butters juried it, and there were a handful of people in it, and it was a really nice show. They did a nice job, and there was a panel discussion, and it was really fun.
Sounds good. And then you're going to be in a group show in Seattle? Is that coming up?
Yeah, it's coming up. It's an interesting idea of he took just a few of the artists at Frederick Holmes Gallery in Seattle and decided to ask us why we do what we do. And he had us do these little videos, and it's going to kind of go along with our work as a way for people to kind of understand why artists do what they do, help collectors.